Hey, everybody. Welcome on back to Verbal Shenanigans. Today was a great episode, episode 231, and we are very happy to bring it to you. It took a while to put it all together, and we finally did it. But before we get to that, this show is brought to you by Wolf Nation Apparel. Wake up, live free. Wolf Nation is focused on bringing designer clothing to men, women, children at an affordable price. Wolf Nation is currently putting right now out snapback hats, hoodies, joggers, coats. So go check them out at wolfnation.rocks and put your pre-orders in before this brand explodes. Wolf Nation, it is only a dream if you are not pursuing it. We are also brought to you by Trivia Revolution. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based out of New Jersey in beer bars and breweries. Every week there is a featured brewery prize that you can win even if you are the last place team. So go check out Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, I also wanted to tell you that you can listen to this podcast in a lot of new locations. Yes, you can listen to your iTunes or your podcast app or Stitcher or Laughable.com. But we are also now on the Coming Right Up Network on Live 605 Media. We'll be on there starting February 15th. And the Discover County Network, DCN Internet Radio. We are on the talk station several times a day. So go check out both of those broadcast platforms. Now, today we are joined by the one and only Sid Vicious, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, former world champion, WCW, WWF, and he was even in ECW for a while. And it took us a long time to get him. We've been trying to set up this interview for a long time, and it kind of happened when we did not expect it. And we got to sit down for quite a long time and a very enjoyable interview. So enjoy Sid Vicious or Psycho Sid, whatever you want to call him, Sid Udy. It was a great interview, so enjoy the podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is Sid Vicious, and you listen to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, everybody. Mike Berlew. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans Podcast episode. I think we're, what are we at? 230?
Let me go into the site. Find out, Scotty.
Let's
we
entertain
are at
the listener.
231.
Oh, we're above 230.
Yes.
All right. So we are above 230 episodes, and welcome to 231, where we changed the whole format. We are now a we eat hot wings and talk about global issues on each episode.
We talk about the history of the unicycle.
we've shifted gears here. We're a new podcast. Mm-hmm. No, well, it might work because it would get us more listens. But
yeah. Scott, what is your favorite butterfly?
But anyway, guys, welcome back or welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. That's Mike there. I'm Scott, and each week we bring on an interesting guest, and we've been more than. What's the word I'm looking for? More than lucky, I guess, to interview some of the people we've talked to, and today is no different. But
I wouldn't call it luck. We're hard workers. I mean, there's plenty of people when we've said, "Hey, I've interviewed this and that." They're like, "How on earth did you get these people?"
That's true.
I mean, we had a ground game. I mean, first it was just like tweet, but. We're not going to give all of our secrets, but
no,
I think friends that said to both of us, and I was like, "Man, I can't. How did you do that?"
I think it's very important to not give all the trade secrets out. And I know this sounds like a toot your own horn segment at the moment, but we have had people say, "Hey, how did you do that? Did you know somebody?" And the truth is, me and Mike know absolutely nobody besides each other. It does become hard work, and it does become kind of a resume based kind of thing, I guess. But But enough of that. Enough of that. And but go back and listen to some of the awesome interviews we've had in the past couple of weeks. Last week was John Fratelli from the Fratellis.
He didn't do that song, but Scott likes the free bass.
Free yes, I like the free bass while I'm. I'm shooting crack cocaine into my body as we speak.
I'm going to use that WAV file now.
So, I guess like let's start this episode real quick with I had two interesting comedy shows this weekend. So Friday night. I got booked to do pretty good paying gig, and I was kind of happy about it. But it was at a place on the flyer. It said Charlie's Place at Notre Dame Church or whatever. So I'm like, oh, Charlie's Place must be some kind of like cool cafe or like coffee shop or something like that. No. Charlie's Place was the basement of a church.
Okay, I've done a few shows like that.
Yeah. So right away, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. Some of these can be brutal. Some of them can be fun. Now, I show up, and the booker's a good guy. Good guy, comic trying to make it, do a bunch of good things for charity. But right away, I say to him, like, he had asked me a couple of days before, and he's like, hey, I know you have a sound system, like, can you bring it just in case? Because I don't know what they're... I'm like, yeah, of course. In fact, I have learned over the years that I bring my sound system to pretty much everywhere. I stick it in the car because a lot of people producing comedy shows have no idea what they're doing. And the sound is always the first thing to be terrible. Mm. Now, I had done...
Here's the microphone. This is a snow cone.
Yeah.
I don't know where to plug it in. It's wireless.
Now, I had done shows for this guy once before, and he used a wireless mic, and during the feature act, it just blew out, and they had to, like, yell their jokes to the room, and I am, like, deathly afraid of that horrific idea. Like, that makes me, like, oh, God, I can't even, I don't want to do that ever. So the first thing I say to him is, like, hey, you know, I have my sound system, because I come in, and I notice the wireless mic set up, and I'm like, I have my sound system, why don't we set it up? He's like, oh, no, I think we'll be okay. And he goes up and does, like, a pre-show announcement. It sounds, like, really tinny, you know what I mean? Like, kind of like an auditorium sound, like, you know, like, hey, guys, you ready for a comedy show? You know, like, oh, we're going to have fun tonight. I'm like, oh, God, like.
Bullhorn kind of sound.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, I could fix this in 2 seconds. And then I tell him, I said, yo, you know, I stuck my lights in the car, like the spotlight and like a colored light. We can make it look good. He's like, no, we got the fluorescent. Like, so fluorescent lights, for those of you who ever want to throw a comedy show, not the best look. It kind of just looks like a VFW basement. Like, it's very bad. So,
you know, you're not doing sexy talk up there on stage with the rose light piercing into your eyes.
Right. And the lights like are above you, but there's no light on your face. You know what I mean? Like, so like, you know, like me who like I've tried to transition my act to where there's like a lot of act outs at this point and like kind of facial expressions and stuff like that. I'm like, boo, you know, like no one can see me, you know? So I'm like, I have my lights. And he's like, ah, oh, don't worry about it. I'm kind of a simple dude. And like, you know, he's the booker. You're not going to argue with him. And he's like, okay, whatever. If that's what he wants, that's what he wants. So he goes up to host. And sure enough, 3 minutes in, what do you think happens?
The mic goes out.
Yep. All of a sudden you hear it.
Out.
And he starts just like yelling jokes to the crowd, and sure enough, what does he do? Go, hey, Scott, like on the microphone, like, you got that PA. So I have to run upstairs and bring down my PA twice because I didn't know what cables I had and whatnot. So up and down twice. Now, this really breaks down the fourth wall when you're the feature act, and you're the guy setting up the sound behind the host while he's like yelling jokes.
Please tell me, like, they were giving the comedian on stage the stretch sign where they had to do like 40 minutes because you couldn't figure out the wires.
Yeah, so I'm trying to set it up as quick as possible, and I finally hook it up, and I'm like, I give him the mic. And, I mean, so the sound started working, and, you know, I went up, and the first thing I said was, like, exactly what I just told you. Like, well, guys, it's hard to, like, get up for me because you saw me, you know, setting up the speakers. It looks like I'm an eighth grade dance DJ. You know, and the fourth wall was broken, but I did throw a good jab at him. I was like, Robert, pretend the sound system went out when the truth is no one really wanted to hear his jokes. So, and that went over pretty well, but it was just a weird, it was weird setup, but I was able to really get them playing on the room, like the church room stuff, you know, like I was like, we couldn't even make it to the big room upstairs, you know, like so it actually turned out being good. It was cool because I had to do like 25 minutes, and it was a nice stretch and relaxing, even though it was like super stressful. And then
did God thank you at the end of the night?
No, God has never thanked me yet, but I'm still waiting.
I mean, it's his house you performed, and you figure when it came down, it'd be like, hey, that was a good set.
No, nothing yet. So then Saturday, I got booked to do host a Knights of Columbus gig. Now, Knights of Columbus, VFWs. This is where the money is. This is where, if anyone doesn't know, this is where the comics kind of like make their daily thing when they're not doing like cool clubs and stuff. And I'm not even into the cool clubs thing, so this is where you make a little bit of money doing things, and I will take any gig. Obviously, I'm doing a cat convention in April,
KKK convention later this summer.
Right. I mean it'd be pretty funny though. It'll be pretty funny. But so I go and do it. And, you know, big room, like really big, like probably like 250, 225. So I'm like, all right, this is cool. And nice. one of the nicer nights at Columbus, like not like I didn't feel like I was going to get stabbed, which is I did a VFW. I don't know if I told this on the podcast. I did a VFW down by Cherry Hill about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. And the only bathroom was right behind where the comics were standing. So, you know, opening of the show, great. I'm hosting. I'm doing well. Now, when after the middle goes off and I'm hosting again, what do you think everyone's trying to do?
Go to the bathroom.
Yeah. So it was like an episode of The Walking Dead. Like these drunk, like white trash women are just like walking around and like going to the bathroom. And I literally was like moving in and out of the way of VFW patrons down in Cherry Hill. And that was very interesting. But this was a really nice night to Columbus. Like it was modified and painted and. So I'm like, all right, 200 some people, like this is gonna be fun. So the guy in charge comes up, hey Scott, we're gonna have a there's an 11-year-old girl gonna go up before you, and that's how we presented it. I swear to God.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, comic, is she good? Is she good? Just like, you know, like
I've been in the game for 8 years.
Yeah. And no, they're like, no, she's a singer from the School of Rock, and she's gonna go up and play like 4 ukulele songs.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think I've ever heard that anytime I've done shows.
No, and I'm like, well, obviously, okay, was the first thing I said, but in my head, I'm like, one, how do I follow this? Two, what if she's horrific, and I gotta address that elephant in the room? And, you know, like, and it's just such a big room. And she went on for like 10 minutes. She did Girls Just Want to Have Fun. She did some comedy song that didn't hit. And, but it turned out awesome because my opening line, like going up, I was like, I got to address the elephant. I'm like, guys, how do I follow? Like, yeah, she's been on Broadway and now welcome your host, some like big pile of shit in a red flannel shirt, you know, you know, like, but it turned out to be good. But that was it's just funny how the dynamic is so different. Like the mindset of approaching a 200-person fundraiser, especially that kind of crowd who's been drinking and eating and enjoying themselves for a while, to a club where they're comedy people, it's just, I'm starting to learn a little bit of, like, what mindset to go on stage with. So, but it was definitely an interesting weekend of comedy.
Yeah, I mean, did you prepare your Tiny Tim jokes since you played ukulele? Or,
oh, no.
Or who's
no.
that Hawaiian guy who did...
Well, you know I have a solid 20 minutes on Tiny Tim.
I know. Well, I mean, that was the perfect setup. I don't know why you kept it in the bag and all and said, what's the deal with women? You know, I mean, you really didn't read the room.
But yeah, interesting weekend of comedy and whatnot. But Berlo, I kind of want to get into our guest right away. Like, I don't want to BS much more just because.
Yeah, he's not a person to leave waiting.
No. And okay. So background of this story is that months ago, I'm going to say 4 to 6 months. I'm bad with time, but I'm going to go with that. I wanted to interview Psycho Sid, or Sid Vicious, or Sid Justice, or whatever you want to call him.
Lord Humongous.
Yeah, I tried to go by that name, but it was more of an irony kind of thing. So I wanted to get him on the line, and I had gotten in touch with like a promotion company that was like Sid something promotions. And they got me back, and they emailed me his number. They're like, just call. So over the weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, I had called and called and called, and he answered the phone many times, and we had like some conversation, like, but every time we restarted, it was like, who are you? I'm like, oh, I'm Scott from Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. You don't know who I am? No. But it was like, you... I wanted to get him on the line, and I had even told you. I remember one night we had 3 interviews scheduled, and I said, "Oh, we have a surprise guest." And I remember like sending you like a meme or a GIF of like Psycho Sid slamming people, and you're like, "Oh shit, okay, it's gonna be good." And we've called and called and called and called, and it didn't work out. But tonight, we finally got him.
Yeah, we did, and. If we didn't get him tonight, we were playing on the weekly bit of calling him and just figuring out what we get from his side. Do we get his voicemail? Do we get a call back in an hour? Does he just chat with us for 2 minutes and go, oh, I'll call you right back?
Yep.
What could have – the possibilities would have been endless, but now we'll have to think of bits for next week.
Now, Berlo, you still watch wrestling.
Yep, you're
still,
time to time.
You're still a big loser. But do you have any Psycho Sid memories?
I remember like the big deal when he came out to referee the Hulk Hogan match at SummerSlam. I remember the whole deal where he went to the back and Hogan was posing and like. Hogan kept on waving for him, and he like peeked his head out like a shy little girl, like, what, me? What, me? And Hogan basically begged him to get to the ring, and then he just ripped off his shirt to pose with him.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the first memory I have of him, and obvious one of the last memories I have of him, other than when he made a surprise appearance on Raw, was obviously his pay-per-view match in WCW where he jumped off the second rope to give a boot, and the I guess the best way to say it is Alex Smith himself.
Yes, he snapped his leg. I have a funny memory, but I tell it in the interview, so I will leave it at that. But we got to interview Psycho Sid for what is it, for about an hour? 50 minutes to an hour?
Something like that. I went upstairs and the wife's like, you still podcasting? It hasn't been that. Oh, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a real pleasure to talk to him. And it was cool to pick his brain and the stories he told. So, guys, with that, enjoy our interview with Sid Vicious, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, whatever you want to call him, Sid Udy. and it was a fantastic time. So please enjoy.
All right, so you want to do the silly show?
Let's do this silly thing right now, baby. So Sid, my buddy Mike is on the line. He's my co-host. So first off, thank you so much for giving us a couple minutes here. We really appreciate the time.
Appreciate you guys calling in.
Mike, you there? Mike?
Mike's scared shitless right now. Come on, Mike. I can't beat you up over the phone.
Let's see. Oh, hold on. Here comes Mike. Mike, there you are.
Here I am.
There you go,
Mike. You're here.
All that time, I thought Mike was already...
Beam him in, man.
...was already on the line. But, Sid,
Beam him in, Scotty.
He's in. Now we are... You're in what, Arkansas?
Are you asking me, and you've asked me on your stupid show, and you asked me where I'm from?
No, I'm asking you if you're there right now.
Well, you're asking me. You didn't know already?
Well, I didn't know if you were traveling.
Well, I'll tell you, it's hard to know that. Because as a wrestler, sometimes I guess someone made it up. They said I was from, I was born on 4th of July, and I was born in the USA or something silly like that. No, yeah, I'm from Arkansas.
That's awesome. So right now we got Arkansas, New Jersey, and Georgia on the line at one time. So it's a beautiful...
Who's New Jersey?
I'm Jersey. Mike
now
is...
Let me tell you something, man, real quick. Are we on air or whatever right now?
Yeah, we're recording, but we could...
Okay, so let me tell you. We were on the road, because you get bored. We listened to the Jerky Boys. I was the biggest fan of the Jerky Boys.
Frank Rizzo here. Frank Rizzo.
I'm gonna tell you, I used to do that shit. I can't remember it now, but I thought, this guy's in the South thought that was the coolest stuff, you know?
It's that changed a lot of things. I mean, I remember playing that in our cars in high school, playing the CD and the tape and cracking up for hours. But
not to cut you off, but I will. Because I'm the who's really everybody wants to listen to talk. No, but
correct.
You know, they actually did a couple runoffs of that from sort of the same deal from, I can't remember who it was, but it was someone from the South. It wasn't near as effective, but it was still pretty funny. But it's never like the Jerky Boys. Man, when they called that one guy about the bricks or something, that was, we replayed that and replayed that. That's all we listened to.
So Sid, it's hard to even find a place to start with you. You've had such a long career and whatnot. So why don't we start in the present? What, other than, you know, wrestling from time to time, what are you doing nowadays?
I'm glad we talked about this. I'm sure that's why you asked me this. Really what I'm doing now is, over the last couple of years, I've done a few things. I've done some documentaries. I like doing film, things like that. I did a little of that, but... really what I'm doing right now, that, and I'm doing a bunch of things, but one of the things that really mattered to me, I'm trying to write, not a book, but a couple books. And doing that, and I won't go into it, but it sort of got me into religion, not to really become religious, because I'm not a religious person, but I go to church, and the more things, what church really led me to, and that was into the giving and doing for people.
Right.
But and actually, I do more of that than actually go to church. And I'm in a couple missions that I've had a great time with. Is one of the missions is on Saturday mornings we feed the unfortunate or the unsheltered, meaning homeless. I like to say homeless. Sometimes I want people to know how bad it is, because sometimes when we hide that, we don't understand the severity of it.
Right.
When you're there on Saturday morning, so when I first went there the first couple of times, I thought, you know, I'm going to be there, and they're going to go, hey, there's Sid Vicious, and blah, 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 blah. You know, it happens everywhere I go. You know, especially, you know, here in the South, where, you know, we all, it's like I've been on this Memphis TV, everybody thinks I'm like their brother. Well, when people go to places like that to, you know, get free stuff, and this is all we give away. This is what's great and sad about it. We give two cans of Vienna sausages, a pack of crackers, a bottle of water, and possibly like an oatmeal cake or something like that. And the guy who heads this is named Drew Woodruff. Now, he's the deacon of the church. We do this out of called St. Mary's Cathedral, which I won't go into. It's got a great history. Back in the yellow fever epidemic at Memphis, that's where almost everybody died. And real quick, a third of the Memphis population died, a third of the population left, and actually Memphis lost his city ship. But anyway, this St. Mary's Church is a sort of a martyr place, which is cool. And so that's where we do it. Drew, who is the deacon there, is easy to get in touch if anybody's listening and wants to ever contribute or help. He is the one who's run this mission, and as a deacon, he doesn't get paid because churches don't have money, right? Not our church doesn't.
Right.
It's a really poor church. And so Drew's done this himself for the last 10 years. In the last 10 years, he's given away estimately 150,000 cans of Vienna's. And so that would be 75,000 packs of crackers, you know, 75,000 bottles of water. And he's done this on he just retired recently and got his first set of teeth. I used to call him, if I remember his name, I always call him the Holy Hillbilly because he had this list. And now that he lost his list, I don't like him as much. I've told him that, but I'm just joking. But when he did the readings, because he's really cool and he's like a hillbilly, and he's like, I love listening to the readings he did at our church. It's called St. Mary's Episcopal Church, if anybody wants to know. But anyway, he's done this himself. And so that's what sort of drew me to it. And then he does. So anyway, that's what we're doing. And so if anybody, and I'm fixing to start, actually, I'm going to try to do, I don't know, I've got it totally figured out, but I'm going to start filming there a little bit. And so I want other people to see this. I'll tell you real quick. And I'm going to plug something else real quick. There's a station in Memphis called 89.9 The Weevil. Maybe the other than Austin City Limits, the greatest educational vehicle for learning all types of music, okay? But they don't have commercials. And what they do have a commercial is something like this. And I can't remember the website's name, but the guy says this in some of his little speeches. He says, think about it for a second. If we gave every time that we thought to give and didn't give, think what might happen. And man, it just hit me like a hammer in the head. Man, we might have cured cancer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's what, again, I don't know. I think I was probably supposed to have been a nurse in life, not a wrestler, you know, or something like that. Because I really feel passionate about those things. And so dealing this with this one with Drew, we have another one, which is some of the people in church, and the lady heads this is named Dr. Susan Nelson, as we try to raise money, vitamins and things for orphanage they have in Haiti, and it's just for handicapped children, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
And I'm going to be embarrassed because I can't remember her name. It's Sister Noah or something. She started this by herself, you know, I don't know, 70, 80 years ago. And she's got it built up to 200 children. And the thing about Haiti, guys, is that if you're a handicap, you're automatically, for the most part, discarded because, one, they can't afford to feed you, and you're too much trouble. So the school has around 80 full-time children and the 120 that come through the school season. And part of the deal that what they try to do there is called the tuition gap. And for that, you know, say it costs $170 to go there a year maybe it's 700. That's what it is, 700 a year. And so Susan Nelson raises money to pay all but like 150. So if we can get people to donate $150 every time you donate 100, or whatever, it might be $120, it goes to another kid getting a years of education. Not just your education. They get a meal a day. They get medical help and all this. And like I was talking to a gentleman that helps on this a little bit. As people, we dissociate ourselves about this so much because, one, it's so far away. And I hate to say this. I went to one of the biggest autograph signings of all sports at Sports Expo for the All-Stars game this year in Washington. And I met everybody. I won't mention their names because I don't want to embarrass them. Not one person cared to hear this story. I showed this lady one of the books that was written for the school called Two Good Feet. And it's about the girl that could sew and thread a needle with her feet. And the only person gave me money was a lady at the Delta counter who was a baggage handler and gave me $16 for her tips. So that's how hard it is to get a nickel for this kind of stuff, you know. So what I've done is this, and it's not a big deal, but every little bit counts. One of the things, like for the children in Haiti, we try to just collect multivitamins. And the reason is they're handicapped because their mother didn't get a vitamin. Most of the reasons, that's the reason they're handicapped. Not always, but a lot of the reasons. So that's what we try to do. We have teams that go over there about four times a year, and everything we can get, we just put them in suitcases, take it over. And the reason why is this, And this is why we always specify or you know, ask people, don't see anything that might be expired, because if you have one thing expired in the bag, that all of it is taken, because this is a country that's taking. They don't want you to give. They don't want these kids to get that. They want to sell that in the black markets. Now, I'm not trying to get shot by some official in Haiti tomorrow, but, you know, that's what happens, you know.
Yeah.
So I know that sounds boring to you guys, but that's what I've sort of been doing, and that's what I'm doing, and I'm going to keep doing for a long time.
It's not even close to boring. I think it's fantastic. Yeah, like, who would have thought the guy that was able to powerbomb people all over the ring is out there helping, you know, in major ways? And I think it's very admirable of you, and you should be proud of that.
Well, and this is the thing is too, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I gave a lot, and I'm going to go in and specify everyone's name. You know, we'll take the rest of the tonight. But I've gave more people in the wrestling business their break as well. A lot of people, I didn't even know the guys. I saw something and I got them a job. You know, so I've always been like that. But no, this right here, guys, is just, it's just satisfying. I'll give you an example. On about 3-4 times a year, we have another church that helps us, and we actually give hot meals. And when you see the children come up, man, it just tears your gut out, you know. But anyway, so let's get away from that. I don't want to bore. I know everybody don't want to hear that. But so that's what I've been doing. So what do you guys do with your spare time? Jack off?
Yeah. Well, definitely that.
Yeah, from
definitely
time to time. I mean, not
there.
Every
you
time.
Go.
Yeah, that takes up that takes up about, you know, 3 minutes, and then the rest of the time, you know, we do a lot of
then
this.
The rest of the time, you're playing Candy Crushers, right?
Right. Candy Crushers. No, I'm a stand-up comic at night, and, you know, do the work thing during the day. But, you know.
Let me ask you this. How is that? I heard that Jake Roberts is doing stand-up comedy.
That's what I heard, too. I heard.
Nick Foley also does it.
Jake Roberts was on Joe Rogan recently, and it was a freaking fantastic episode. And the documentary is really good, and he, I don't know if he's doing straight up stand up or more of like storytelling about his career.
No, I'm going to tell you, he was advertised here, right here in Memphis, next to me. It was all in the newspaper. He was doing one of these little comedy clubs. I saw him in a show in Oklahoma this past summer.
Really?
And he told me he was doing it. Now, what?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's doing stories.
I was laughing about what I was about to say. I don't see how he. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't want to knock Jake, but I don't know how he could even be funny when he can't even talk.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know? If you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's had a rough one, though, Jake. He definitely
is. Yeah, he's a rough one. It's my ass.
So
he's a card, man. You know, and I'm not trying to be mean or and I'm not throwing. I'm not like this. I'm just honest, unfortunately. You know, Jake is one of the goofiest people I've ever met in my life. His father was one of the smartest people I ever met in my life. Now, Jake is also one of the smartest people I ever met in my life for the wrestling business. He knows it, man. Like, I don't know. He knows it. You know what I mean? And should have been a lot more successful. And he probably should be, you know, a writer, creator, and all that. It's just, unfortunately, you know, his problems won't allow him to do that, you know?
Right.
I'm going to be honest with you. He gave me... I won't even go into what he did to me one time. And this is it. We hear this in wrestling so much. He goes, "Hey, kid, why don't you just grab a wrist lock?" I was working with Vader, and we were struggling our asses off. You know, we're both working our asses off, but we can't get to people. And what it was, we were doing too many small man moves, you know, to get them. And Jake came to us and he said, "Hey, man, grab a wrist lock." And, dude, I'm not exaggerating here. That right there is what made me the world champion in WWF the very first time.
What drew you to wrestling when you were younger? Were you like, cause you have obviously massive size and
no,
like,
I'll be honest with you. This would I'm actually I told you writing a book. I'm actually still screening some writers. This is a tough process because I'm real picky about things. I've got a couple guys I think got a good chance to it. And if anybody else wants to submit themselves for this writing job, I'm still listening to ideas. Of course, they're going to be all my ideas. But no, what got me in the business was this.
Real simple. I wasn't a wrestling fan. I probably had only seen wrestling, I could actually, maybe three times my whole life. I was a big guy, like I said. I was a, remember the country started a football league called the USFL?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, they had a tryout in Memphis. I walked on, hadn't played football since high school, and made the team until the last cut. And long story short, I met some promoter who said, hey, man, if you can't make it as football, I'll get you in wrestling. And this guy was trying to rip me off. Well, Randy Savage, who was working for the Memphis Territory at the time, and Hillbilly Jim, which was Harley Davidson at the time, and Lanny, and just everybody, all the, you know, Memphis had some of the top talent. Well, they all did. All the territories did at one time. But so hey, man, we can get you in wrestling. And I was trying to, I had an offer for a walk-on scholarship at Arkansas State to try to play a little bit there, then get it to the NFL. And they said, man, you can make, you know, amount of dollars here. And at the time, I was going to have to be an offensive lineman. I didn't.
I was going to say, what were you, a lineman, a tight end?
Like, well, you're that's what it was, offensive lineman. And so I really wanted to be the defense. I just had, since I hadn't played since high school, I didn't have enough skills in order to, man, maybe through a small junior college, I could have gotten that, you know, because I was still young enough. So anyway, I met them. My wife was pregnant. I said, you know, it's going to take 2 years, 3 years. Who knows if I even make it. With this here, you know, it, they said, man, with your size and blah, 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 you'll do really well. And so that's what I did. It was a shorter route to money. And so that's the reason, and I'll say this without sounding like a jerk, I think that's one of the reasons I was successful as I was, because I wasn't in it for like what everybody else was. I was in for the money. So, you know, to me, to make the most money, I had to just, all I had to do is just work harder than everybody else. And so that was a pretty easy deal for me, because I usually work harder than everybody else, you know, sort of a hard person to be around because of that.
Interesting. I was just thinking that Memphis Showboat team, that had Reggie White on it. You could have been
exactly. And this is it. I'm not bragging, but also Lex Luger was on the team.
Oh, that's right.
He was on offensive. He was an offensive lineman.
Wow.
All right. Now this is the deal. It, with him on the team and Reggie White, and this, I guess it's still, you know, they have the records. I had the longest broad jump and the highest vertical leap of all offensive defensive linemen, and I had a 4.940 at 335 pounds.
No shit. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what got me in, guys, because this is what the deal was. When they had like 4,000 people show up that tryout, you know, if, you know, they ran through all the drills, and if you, like, if you missed one tire or one anything, there was a guy at the end of the line, and he shoved you to the, you were done right at that moment. And so through all the skills I had, you know, I had everything it took, you know, so they kept me and kept me and kept me, and when it got down to the last cut, it's just I was outskilled, you know. So then I got invited to the camp for the Houston Gamblers. The coach brought me in and said, this man, and I don't know why he told me this, why he was being honest. He goes, this league doesn't look like it's going to make it. And so he says, you've got a chance at this football. He said, but, you know, we just don't have a place for you. And so that's why I went back and entertained the thought of going to football, you know. And I wanted to play. I was, you know, as a kid, football, baseball, basketball, karate, boxing, the whole nine yards. You know, so that was – that was just fun for me. And that's why wrestling was fun. And you know, all I had to do is work out and learn how to do a silly interview and act silly. You know, and as football, you know, as a football defensive player, you know, we were always taught to be, football in high school, I was a running back and defensive end. So there were two theories of football. You could do it like an offensive lineman, slow, methodical, intelligently, or be like a defensive guy and just fucking run and cuss and scream and hit people.
Picturing you as a running back is the most frightening thing.
Dude, I'm going to tell you something, dude. Now, I was skinny in high school.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, so that's the difference. But I had more tackles as a defensive end behind the line of scrimmage than I think of all of the teams combined. You know, I was fast, too. That was something else, you know, so that helped me, you know. I loved it. And I loved competing. And if a game, especially football, it never happened, but if a game in baseball got rained out or something, I cried. I cried all night. You know, it's just missing that, you know. And I wanted to play every position. I didn't want to play just one position. You know, I prided myself in that. I remember the kid one year, he had to go to camp, so he was the catcher. Nobody wanted to catch. I said, man, I'll do that. I wasn't any good at it, but I did it, you know.
So let's get into your wrestling career. I mean, let me ask you, like, nowadays they have all these performance centers and the power plants and
right.
schools. How did you go about your training? Did they have that kind of access back then?
It was just in a smaller, cruder form. You know, of course, real guys, you know where wrestling comes from, right?
What's that?
You don't know?
I guess not.
I don't know the form.
Carnivals.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So it was real sketchy. And what wrestling camps really were made for us was to take your money and hope you didn't make it. And, like, I'm not kidding you. And this one when wrestling was popular, and, you know, I went through Memphis's wrestling school run by Tojo Yamamoto. And I don't know how many, maybe 50, 75 people went through that camp that year I was in it. And I was the only one that ever made it. You know, I was the only one that finished it, you know. Because they beat you up so much you didn't want to come back, you know. But they're a little different. They're sort of, I think that they still, from things I heard about even the WWE's camp, that guy that was running, Hugh Morris, he made them sometimes train naked or something, I heard. You know, so but that's where you get in these little dungy areas and they take advantage of you and beat you up and hope you stick yourself through it. And I was able to put myself through it and that's how you get started like that.
Now, did you love the business from the beginning, or
no.
did you grow to love it?
You know, I grew to love it. The thing about it, all the parts of the business was I loved all the parts of the business. I loved, you know, working out and just training and eating and you know, socializing. It's just an extension of another sport. Only it is just. It's a little unsatisfying, you know, someone who wanted to, you know, box professionally or play football professionally or baseball professionally. That was the only thing about it for me. It was disappointing,
right?
Because it wasn't real. And so say for instance, in this business, everybody's so tight about everything. Like, there's a thing called a booking sheet that, you know, that tells you who you're working with that night or the next night. And I've seen guys do this hours and got themselves crazy. Go, I'm working against Bob tonight, and Bob, oh, I wonder what the finish is going to be. Am I going to win or lose? And blah, blah, blah. So, again, in the wrestling business, how I think I was lucky is one is that I was always around the right people at the right time and heard the right things. And one of the things I heard when I was first introduced to wrestling from a guy named Hillbilly Jim was he said, hey, Sid, you're a big guy. He said, this business is fake. He goes, if they ask you to lose, you just go, how do you want me to lose? He says, one, believe this or not, you'll make more money and you'll keep your job.
Huh.
And that was like the best advice you could get, you know? So I said, okay, because he goes, man, if it's real, not a lot of people are signing up for this. And that's true. There were only really, I don't know, maybe three or four really tough guys ever in the business, you know, maybe five, you know?
So let me ask you, I mean, how were you able to get the name Sid Vicious and all with the Sex Pistols? I figured it'd be some kind of copyright infringement.
There was, too. This is what happens on that. Now, how I got the nickname is I had come back from a cruise one time with my wife and a lot of friends. When we got back home, it brought me a shirt and it said Sid Vicious on it, had Mickey Mouse in the middle of it, sort of like a joke. Because it really is a person, I'm pretty shy, laid back, and that was sort of, as a skinny kid, they gave it to me. So when I got into wrestling, I was getting a chance to go to Japan to wrestle, and at the time I was wrestling as a character named Lord Humongous, and the Japanese company didn't like the character Lord Humongous, and they said, let's call you something else. So I was going from Continental, moving back home to work the Memphis territory, and I came up with the character named Sid Vicious with the leather chaps and leather vest, and that's how that got created. Now, you're right about one thing. WCW, they didn't mind using the name Sid Vicious. They didn't mind, I guess, the legal ramifications because for whatever reasons. Vince, now, they always say this. I don't know. I didn't ask the guy this. He said, but they didn't want to do it because there might be a time where the lady who owned the name Sid Vicious was his aunt. And supposedly there was, you know, she didn't want to sell it to Vince. And Vince's, of course, we know the story about the Wildlife Federation. I don't know how people think about that. I think it was one of the stupidest moves in the world. you know, it's, and if it's true, I don't know, but the company that owned the .com, whatever, WWF, was a World Wildlife Federation, and they offered to sell to Vince for $250,000 or $750,000, and Vince refused to do it. It changed his name, which I don't think it ever, the business ever really picked up after that. And then on top of that, he had to change so much to do that. It had to cost millions of dollars just to change over. He says he's just hard-headed. And we know that that's got to be somewhat true with that guy.
Now, let me ask you, how do you go, you know, in a business that's built on adrenaline and selling out, you know, selling yourself to the crowd and being the top dog and being the center of attention and, you know, always putting on a show to living kind of a normal life, to calming down at the end of the day, you know, without getting involved in things that are going to take you to directions that you don't want to go. Like, do you have especially as you get older, do you look back and say, I should have done things differently, or did it just come with age?
Are you talking about
just anything, like how you calm yourself down after that kind of career?
First of all, I wake up at 3:30 in the morning without an alarm clock. I'm wired like this from birth, okay?
Right.
Second of all is this. Before I got into wrestling, I worked as a farmer. All the way from my great-grandfather was a farmer, actually sharecroppers. And that's pretty much what I was working on, just as a farmhand.
Right.
I worked myself even a young kid to a great position as a manager over, I won't go into it, a very large farm. And the fact that actually the farm at one time was over 100,000 acres. I don't know if you know what that is or not.
100,000 acres, wow.
Have worked in a position like that. So, but after getting out of farming, again, I was just really a tractor, a glorified tractor driver that could, you know, do a lot of things. And had a pretty good position, had a company truck, company credit card, things like that, and I paid a nice apartment and stuff like that. But after farming got done, I had, you know, got into construction, got into wrestling. But I think, to answer your question is, I never went through that. Guys, from the minute I got into business, as Lord Humongous, you didn't have to deal with fame, because actually you were told to tell people you're not Lord Humongous. So that was easy for me. I could be myself all the time. And so as soon as I became Sid Vicious and got popular, if you ask any of my friends, the first thing I started telling people is, man, all I want to be is just, I don't want to be Sid Udy again. I don't want to be Sid Vicious, you know? So I wanted that faster than anybody, because I don't think anybody in this business or in this type of profession, entertainment, ever wanted out of that position faster than I did. I didn't go into it for the fame. And anywhere he meets me or talks to me, they go, man, of all the people, and I don't know why they tell me this, but they go, of all the people I've talked to in this business, you seem like the only normal person I've ever talked to. You know, maybe a little bit of a jerk sometime, but that's it, you know. I've never looked at this other than what it is, you know. Now, how we measure our success is what we did. Now, I always just measure my success by income, but I didn't look at championships and stuff like that. But if you have to measure success in this business, I think you would have to say how long you stayed on top. And this is no exaggeration. I don't think anybody, I can't think of many people can say this. I started my first match in main event, and I ended my last match in main event, and almost my whole career was main event, even when I started in the small little territory. So to me, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be main event. I wanted to, you know, I was told, and so as a draw that people thought I was, that I wouldn't be a world champion. The world champions usually got belts because they needed a belt to draw money. And if you look at it, the history of that proves that. When someone like Booker T, and I like Booker T, I gave him his job. I gave him his job in WCW. I gave him his break in this business. I like him a lot. I think he's overrated. But when you're a 14-time world champion, that means you lost 14 times as well. And if you're a 14-time world champion, and we know this, he never drew a nickel. And that's he's had a great career, don't get me wrong. That's what someone like you guys as a wrestling fan don't know about this business.
Interesting. Well, let me ask you, are you into like a very stiff style competing in the ring, or do you don't like it when guys get relaxed? Like, just looking at your career, just starting off and when you were with the Skyscrapers, you're feuding with the Steiner Brothers and the Road Warriors. And from everything I read, you know, like Scott and the Road Warriors, they were pretty stiff, for what I've understood, growing up. And also, is that something you look forward to when they get a little... tighter on the punches and stuff?
This is the thing. Honestly, I'll be honest with you now. I'll just give you a real quick example. You said the Steiners. You mentioned myself, the Road Warriors. Well, you didn't mention Dr. Dusty Williams. You didn't mention Stan Hansen. You didn't mention Vader. And all those guys was in WCW at the same time, okay? And then myself and Danny Spivey. I'm not going to – I don't know how many times people were taken down a center stage in an ambulance. And what it is, back in those days, we were in all competition to see who could be the stiffest. And I mean, for instance, one of the Road Warriors, Animal, his brother Johnny Laurinaitis, who was one of the dynamic dudes, you know, I broke his nose one time. And they all got upset about it. And I said, and I told whatever Animal's name and whoever else was mad about it, I said, if you don't like it, I'll break your nose too. Now, they got to realize, I'm not saying this, I mean, my whole life, guys, I have fought, really fought. You know, I boxed my whole life as a kid and took karate. And when people say fight to me, I don't think a lot of times they don't really know what that means. So when someone goes, you don't know who you're fucking with, I laugh at that. I mean, then usually I hit the guy. Because if you talk fight to me, that's what's, it's going to be that. I'm not going to say fight to you. And that's what the difference between people who fight. When they have to. I'll tell you a good example of that. The greatest example of all is that guy, Bart Gunn. The most unassuming person. I rode with him, trained with him, and still didn't know he was that. I knew he did tough man contests and stuff like that, but who knew he was that? You know, he beat maybe the toughest guy of all time, Steve Williams. Now, he did it in the Steve Williams later years, too. You know, but again, he did it, you know, and I think everybody would say Steve Williams was maybe the toughest guy at one time, you know.
No doubt.
Now, Sid, we got a question from a fan here. I was I'm put on Facebook that we were interviewing you. He wanted to know, how did you get approached to replace Ultimate Warrior in the six-man tag at International Incident? That was his question.
Okay. I'm assuming that was the pay-per-view in Vancouver. Where it was, I think me, I met Ahmad Johnson and Davey Boy.
Correct. He said you were in a six-man tag with Shawn Michaels and Ahmad Johnson versus Owen Hart, Vader, and the British Bulldog.
Okay, I knew they were. Okay, yeah. I'll tell you what happened on that, guys. I had just been brought in as Psycho Sid. I had worked about a year. Had got into a situation with my neck that I was, I'd lost all movement on the left side of my body to push or pull.
Wow.
The doctor told me, this is a true story. It's sort of funny. It's in my book. It'll be in my book. So I went to the doctor, and I didn't tell anybody on the road when it happened to me. We were in Albany, New York, which a lot of things happen to be in Albany, New York, I won't go into. But I said, I got up one morning, and I didn't tell anybody. I just went to the airport and went home, and I took myself to the doctor, and they said, you've got a pinched nerve, and one more blow to the back of the neck, and you're going to be paralyzed the rest of your life. I didn't tell Vince that. You know, I just stayed at home. And what happened at this time, too, is sort of funny. And it goes into taking the Ultimate Warrior's place, and if you got a second. So back then, guys, believe it or not, WWF was such in bad financial shape that we didn't get paid for sometimes months at a time.
Right.
And that's no kidding. And how guys had money is I saved my money, and that's the way I was able to work there. And so after they weren't paying me for a while, I told J.J. Dillon, I said, if I don't get $1,000 a week, I'm not coming on the road. And so they sent me $1,000 a week just to cover my expenses or some of them, right? Now, we got paid, but it was just held up, you know, and that's what people don't understand, dude. That's how bad the business was.
Right.
And so the business is that bad. They're telling me I'm going to be paralyzed. So I said, hell, I went home. I went to Fresno, California, took some chemistry classes and become an agricultural rep here in the South and took that job and never told anybody. And so Vince is still sending me that $1,000 a week. And I mean, and taking a new job is only making about $40,000, you know, after you're making, you know, I won't go into what I was making. So that was a big, you know, having to start over deal. And that extra $1,000 a week really helped me out, you know, even though I had all my home and everything already paid for, you know, so I, because I set myself up right. So anyway, I'm doing this ag job, me and my wife, at this thing called Balloon Fest in Greenwood, Mississippi. And it brings me home a Saturday instead of a Friday. And our housekeeper is saying, some guy's been calling here named Vince McMahon. I'm going, oh my God, he's wanting his money back, you know? And so I'm going, don't answer this phone. And so I'm on the phone. This is, we have call waiting, but it's not caller ID yet. And so it clicks over. And I think it's surely this guy's not calling me, you know, on Saturday afternoon at my house. So I click it over and it's him. Sid, I'm like, yeah, he goes, hey, this is Vince McMahon. Look, I need you really bad. I got a show tonight in Baltimore, or it was Detroit, one of the two. He goes, and I've had trouble with the Ultimate Warrior, and I need a place in it tonight. And I said, well, it's 5 o'clock. He goes, I've got a car coming to pick you up. You'll be at the airport, and you'll get dressed on the way to the building. I said, Vince, I mean, I've been off TV for a year. I said, you don't think that someone else has more star power than I do at this moment? He goes, I need star power. And so I think I've got this, you know, 40 grand from this guy or 50 grand. I said, okay, I'll do it, you know. So I do it, and I'm hoping he doesn't bring that up. He didn't even know that, right? I found out later. And so the next week he asked to do the same thing. And then, so he asked me to do the pay-per-view, which I did. So we got to the pay-per-view. And he said, okay, Sid, I need you to come back full time. And I said, well, this is the thing is, I got to tell you this, I'm not coming back. I said, since I've been gone, and I explained to him what was wrong with my neck. And I said, since I've been gone, I've taken a job at a company called Custom Chemicize out of Fresno. And I'm a pharmaceutical, agriculture rep now, and I'm not going to come back to this business. And he said, wow, we really... And guys, at that time, when I left, at that point, they couldn't, when Bret Hart was a champ, we weren't getting paid. They couldn't even sell out of high school. And when I came back, that Vancouver was their first sellout they'd had in years. I'm not saying it was me, but I was the only new face on that show at that time. So, and then after that, I did come back, and it did, we started breaking into our attendance records everywhere. Now, what happened during that conversation was this. So Vince asked me that, and I tell him no. He says, well, I need you to come back. And I said, I can't, Vince. One, I'm not sure yet about what my neck's going to, the doctor say about my neck. And two, I don't trust you. You know, we're not getting paid here very well. And, you know, the thing is, I didn't even try to call WCW because I'd gotten this fight with this guy. I think you guys might have heard about it. So,
yeah, I think I know what you're referencing.
Okay, so I was sort of, I didn't realize they wanted me back, but I was too scared to, I didn't get fired. I walked out. They asked me, you know, right when that fight, before that fight happened, I'd gotten a big raise. They said, if you'll go back to your regular pay, you won't lose your job. I said, fuck it, I'll quit. Even though I'd left Vince and knowing I was on the outs with him, he asked me to come back to work there. So during that night, I just told him this. I said, Vince, I don't trust you. You don't like me. We butt heads. You know, I don't kiss your ass. I tell you the way I feel. We're going to be mad at each other. Already you're mad at me now because I'm saying I'm not going to be here. I said, the only way I can work for you is guaranteed money. I said, because, Vince, when you get mad at me, you're going to put me in a dress. And if I have guaranteed money, I said, then I told him the exact word for this. I said, if you give me guaranteed money, I could wear a dress every night and not care. I said, without guaranteed money, I can't do that. And so he said, okay, what we'll do, we'll pay you on, like they normally do on, I was getting 2% of net profit on houses. So he said, we'll pay like that. And if it doesn't reach what you're asking for, we'll do it. We'll give it to you one lump sum. I said, no, I don't trust you. You know, and so he said, you hold me up. I said, see, here we go. Now you're mad at me because I don't, you know, I wanted guaranteed money. So I got it with a little bit of a signing bonus. So, but that, you know, kept me and him on odds all the time. And that's how I got back for that show.
Wow.
Wow. That's quite an answer, man. Love it.
Yeah. I mean, you're touching on a part like I was going to get into the entertainment side. Like, it's kind of interesting. Like, when people bring up weird times in wrestling history, one item that you were involved in was when WCW brought in RoboCop for a pay-per-view. And I'm just kind of curious, like, you guys are going out hundreds of days a year, beating the living crap out of each other, making it, you know, making it a sport, making it a science and all. When somebody's like, hey, I want you to be scared of RoboCop. I mean, what goes through your head when a...
Well, this is the thing. I'll be honest with you. Really, at that moment, two guys in the moment of the career, things were going so fast for me. I was just doing it again what Hillbilly Jim said, just do what they're asking you for. And that sort of worked out and you know, things like that. And everything's, actually, I'll be honest with you, I knew I was in WrestleMania, my first one, but I didn't, when people said, hey, you remember being in WrestleMania? I went, no. I remember being at the show in Indianapolis, but I really didn't realize that was a WrestleMania. The thing is, every day was just another day. I didn't care who I was working with. And so being at RoboCop, I didn't care about him either. He was only like 4 foot tall. And I wasn't amused with it, you know. I'll tell you what I do look back. I met some really cool people in my life. You know, one of the great things is I got an autographed annual from Dean Smith, the coach from North Carolina. I got Wayne Gretzky asked me for an autograph. And then one of the greatest people I got to hang out with in the back of the dressing room night was one night in San Francisco at the Cow Palace, which we know is a historical place. Was with James Brown, and man, wow. That was one of the coolest nights of my life.
That's great. That's the best duo I can think of: Psycho Sid and James Brown.
I was making James get up and do his deal. I said, "Come on, James, do that split." Oh man, come on, James. Okay.
I love
come on,
it.
I know you're 90. Just do it. No, he was cool, man. He was just cool, man.
I love it.
And I'll tell you another guy I liked a lot was that. Joey C, the little short guy with Kid Rock.
Oh, yeah, from Kid Rock.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
We must have smoked to like 2 million joints together. I tell you, that kid could smoke his weight in weed in every joint. He come to me and said, hey, Sid, you want to go to Smiz? He's thinking like he could talk Carney, right? I go, yeah, let's go Smiz, Joey C. He wrote joints about the side of his arm too.
Oh, Joey C. Oh my God.
I love that guy, man. That's one of the people I really enjoyed. We always got put on the spot, so I love putting him on the spot. I'd go, come on, Joey C, rap. He'd go, oh man, come on, Joey. Okay, rap.
I love it.
Nah, he was one of my favorite people, man. I really enjoyed it. He'd always be at the Palace in Detroit when we came there, if he wasn't on the road or something.
Now let me ask you, now that you're in a different chapter of your life, how is your body holding up? How does it feel after all those years of working hard, road gigs and injuries? Obviously, we've seen injuries from you. How is your body holding up? Do you feel okay?
The thing is, you know, I had, you know, my first serious surgery was had half my right lung removed, and, you know, the last, and I had a, you know, bone taken out of my hip and put in my neck once. Every bursa sac and every joint ruptured, and of course the compound fracture. But at saying all that, I think I'm really doing pretty well. You could ask people who worked out with me, like Scott Hall, all the guys that ever been on the road with me, they know that, man, I'm in shape and I'm always in shape. You know, now I do, I'll be honest, I have noticed a little bit of a, and I guess they say you've lost a step. I've lost a step or two the last year or so.
Gotcha. Good, Mike.
I mean, talking about injury, I mean, we'd be remiss in not talking about.
I'll tell you something real funny, and this is the truth. I got in an argument with a pain management doctor today because I want to take less pain medicine. So that's what I'm saying. That's what I try to fight for. I want to try to be on my own, doing things on my own, you know.
Yeah. I mean, all joking aside, considering some sad history of some performers and all, that's great to hear.
No, that's the thing is, two guys want to go in depth about it. I'll just tell you an interesting story I heard yesterday. And this is the thing about this business, guys, and I won't go into too much of it, but there's a horror side to it, a horrible, horrible side to this business. And I will give you one story. When I, myself, and I'm not very good at predicting things, but when I can tell you, and I told the person himself that he was going to die within this day, And what the story was, he came to me and says, "Yeah, I took 19 pills last night." I said,
"God,
well, Louis, when you get home on your days off," and we were going home, where Detroit was our last night, I said, "You'll get to 22 and you'll get to 23 pills and you'll die." And he did. And so we went back on the road after that, and we never thought about it again. Yeah. And I loved that kid. He was a good kid. That's what this business does.
Yeah.
For me, I had to put blinders on because for me, again, I was in it for the money. I really didn't like many people. Not that I just didn't dislike them, but I wasn't going to be friends with these people. I just wanted to get through it, you know?
Right.
So again, I put blinders on, but what happens, guys, is you ask me about the physicals, how physical it is, the mental side's worse. It's like, after the deal with Chris Benoit, I go out in my yard. I think Chris Benoit is one of the nicest gentlemen I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
And then I was mowing my yard one day, and I said, "This guy that I think so much of, he's a monster." And guys, I won't go into this, but it was simple. And all these guys' stories that we hear about, you know, dying in their sleep or dying alone or blah, 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 is one word. It's depression.
Right. Yep.
And that's what it is. And the story I was going to tell you is this. Someone told me this, a fan who actually, he's a big contributor to my my two charities of the Haiti and the Pop Top thing. And he calls and tells me, he says, "You know a guy named Scotty Riggs?" And I go, "Yeah, I know Scotty." He goes, "Well, he posted last night," and I guess he does this or has done this several times. "Well, I started to kill myself last night, but I talked to a buddy and he talked me out of it."
Jesus.
I wonder how many people are actually posting things like that, and how many, and I know people are thinking of that. I just lost one of my best friends a couple of years ago I lost two of my best friends, both to accidental overdoses.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, guys, and this is no, I've got some pretty smart friends. And they've told me this, and I believe this. They said if this would be in any other industry, there would be a congressional act to find out what the fuck is going on.
Going on, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
No, and now we know, you guys, I'm scared. I hate even talking about this, being a part of it. You guys remember the stories that were revealed about the WWF and the wrestling business,
yep,
and whole about Mel Phillips and the way that some of the talent got treated by some of the predators.
There's a lot of stories out there. Yeah,
dude, I'm telling you, I've seen one firsthand, and where this kid came to me, he was like, after I sort of caught him in the act, he's like, "I don't want to do this. I just want to be a wrestler." Blah, 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 blah. I said, "Listen, man. I said, nothing against you. I'm not trying to be rude to you. I said, but you're a fat little kid, and you're never going to make it in this business." I said, "So you go home, and you don't come back." And he did, you know. And that was his only way out, because once you stoop to something like that, you don't get out of it.
That's terrible. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the leg injury from your last night at WCW. I mean, from everything I've read, it seems like they were pressuring you to do more rope stuff and whatever, which led to the injury. I'm just kind of curious to know about how did you kind of figure your career was going to end that night? And I'm also kind of curious about how they continued the match while you were on the ground, because I remember how they had to bring out the mystery partner and had to kick you around a little bit before they even pinned you and let you go.
I don't even know if they were smart enough to pin me. I think they finally just went off air. I was asking them to pin me. What was this is after what it was, I had had shoulder surgery, and I wasn't even able to put a belt on or tuck my shirt in. Yes. And I wasn't cleared to come back, but they do this to everyone, not just me. "Well, we need you. We need star power, blah, 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 blah. So what we're going to do, we're going to put you in a handicap match with these other two guys, and then your mystery partner's going to come down, but he's not going to be your partner. He's going to be against you, too. And all three of them are going to beat you up, and you'll have three people, different people to work with." And that's the way the business goes. You know, you get a baby face, you got three heels to work with. So that makes sense to me. I said, yeah. So we got into the deal. Really, if I remember right, it would have just been me fighting these guys. You know what I mean? I don't remember what the real finish was. I remember I was to double suplex the two guys in there and then maybe fight the mystery partner or something and go off like that. But when I broke my leg, that's the thing is, I knew I wasn't able to get up, and I just told him, I said, because I didn't want to wait on the mystery partner. I said, just get on top of me and pin me, and after the 1, 2, 3, they'll go black, and I can get out of here and get to the hospital. Of course, when you're dealing with fucking dumbasses that don't know how to fucking, you know, they have to have every goddamn spot in their fucking life setting a match for them, and then even that, they can't carry it out. So that's what happens when you're dealing with idiots like that. So that's, it took me a little longer to get to the hospital than I should have had to.
That's insane, man.
I'm not kidding. I'm grabbing them going, just fucking pin me. They'll go, I said, you dumb motherfuckers. Yeah. And excuse my language, but no. That was a tough night to be in the middle of. You know, it really, this is what it really amounted to. And it's how dumb people are, like Johnny Laurinaitis. He was having a chance to be a booker there. And he thought jumping off the top rope and just instead of giving Scott Steiner, but Scott was great at taking just a regular knee out of the corner. I don't think anybody took that bump better than he did. Scott could do a lot of things like that. And instead of doing one we were not both sure of, that's what Scotty says. Johnny says, well, we need this to get ratings. I want to say, fuck you, dumb idiot. I want to remind him the time I broke his nose. He said, you want that again right now? I should have done that, you know?
No, Sid, one.
I'll tell you what I will do. I'll put an open fight out right now, pay per view against Johnny Laurinaitis.
Wow. Whoa. You heard it right here.
I mean it. I swear to God. I'll knock you out in the first 10 seconds of the fucking fight.
Jeez. Sid, I don't want to take up all your time, and I want to, first off,
before, you already have.
I know, but first I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes. Just amazing stories and really interesting, and you sound like a really down-to-earth, cool dude, man, and we appreciate that.
Well, I'm not.
I know, but I want to tell you, I want to tell you a funny story. When I was in, like, eighth grade, like, when I should have been...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Of course. When I should have been, like, hunting girls down, me and my stupid friend were really into wrestling, and we used to, like, have action figures. And I'll never forget one time we were playing with these action figures, and I found the Psycho Sid action figure in the local Kmart by me. Now, we grew up poor, and, like, they never had anything. And we bought the Psycho Sid figure, and we were so excited about it. And Chris, you had just entered ECW at that time, and you were killing people and throwing people through three. It was fun to be a loser back then because of what you were doing. Like, we made him dominate our little gay little wrestling league that we had. And I just want to say things have come full circle to actually talk to you. And I want to thank you for your time, man. And I think it's really amazing what you're doing with your life.
I appreciate that story. But when you started the story, I was almost afraid that you were going to end it like this. Yes, Sid, you remember that action figure? Yeah. Well, I hate to tell you this, but I actually made love to it one time.
Well, I didn't tell you that part.
That's a sequel.
I didn't tell you that part.
I'm just kidding. No, those are the things, guys, that I take as my reward for this business. When someone tells me that, one of the things what you said that really came to me home there were we both were poor. And things like that came far and few between. If you had something like that, it meant a lot to me. And the wrestling fans, and this is what I do, I like to tell things about this part, about the business, was I had more fun with the wrestling fans because, you know, being a bad guy, and I love being a bad guy, was, you know, the fans knew that bad guys were the nicer guys. We didn't care about our cologne. We didn't care about our hair. And we used to actually sit there and talk to these people at the end of the matches where the good guys wanted to get to, you know, go put perfume on or something, you know. So I remember sitting out there in those nights when it was snowing in Pennsylvania or New York and those people waiting out to the car till we got there. Those are the moments that meant more to me. It didn't mean anything. Like I said, I didn't realize I was in WrestleMania, but I could tell you the stories that were talked and said on the back. I'll never forget one. I want to say it was Buffalo. I'm sorry, I can't remember. But we came out, and this girl said to me, she said, Sid, you suck. I go, yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, you really suck. I said, yeah, I know. She goes, no, actually, you're pretty good. I said, no, you're right the first two times. I really suck. And then she started arguing with me. And then she came to me. She goes, no, let me give you something. I said, all right, what is it? She, here's a free guest pass. And what she gave me was a free trip to Dr. Kevorkian. So she got me pretty good after me trying to get her. So that was a... And some of the friendships of the people I met, you know, as fans, they still call me today. That to me was fun, you know?
Yeah, man, totally. I mean, even just doing the interview with us, it means a lot, man. And it's really cool to see that you took the time out of your day and gave us some time. And we love the stories. We love talking to you. So thank you so much for giving us the time. And if people want to go check you out or see when your book is coming out or communicate with you, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, right now, I got a guy who runs this website. It's not mine. It's called Cycle Supermotion, but he does help me out a lot.
That's how I got in touch with you. That's how I actually got in touch with you.
Exactly. So if people get in contact with Eric, I'm fixing to have another one. I'm fixing to set up a website just for the Pop Tops and the children from Haiti. I'm going to set up a separate website for that that I can say, okay, people can go to this and contact. I'm going to have someone closer to the front line works doing. Eric's a good guy I know out there, but this isn't his forte, and it's too much for him to handle. So I'm missing too many opportunities. So I'm fixing real quick as I can. I'm gonna get another website up. That way I can get quicker. Now what people can do on the Haiti Partnership, you know, it's under West Tennessee WT HaitiPartnership.org. Now, but that tells you about the tuition gap. It shows you their website where the children are doing and stuff like that. But to get to me to get the free picture or like I won't go into dollar figures, but like a picture might cost you a case of Vienna sausages, which is like I think $25 or $20.
Yeah.
You know, or something like I sent a guy a pair of trunks and he sent like I don't know. 100 and I think these guys are selling their trunks for $1,000, but he just sent me $100 worth of children's vitamins for Haiti Partnership. And so, you know, and I'm willing to barter any of these things. I got these silly things don't mean anything to me. And if I could get one kid a vitamin, I'll give all my trunks up.
I love it, man. I love it. Sid, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes, man. And I just really appreciate the time. And you're a genuine dude. And keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome.
Well, I appreciate you guys, too. And I'm glad you were able to take my little sense of humor. I like doing that to people. That's something about the business, too, that we love, if we're able to do it, put people on the spot. And that's what I sort of did with you guys. I did what I did is I wasn't myself for a second. I actually took on a chapter of the Jerky Boys, and I do that. That's why. That's actually where I get that real short stuff, you know. And actually, I'm not that much of a cusser, but that's why I cussed as much as I did tonight too, because we cuss to be cool, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
so cool.
Of course, we don't really mean anything.
Sid, thank you so much. And Psycho, or Sid Vicious, Mike Burloom.
Yeah, I was sitting here, I was watching you going and all getting all excited. I couldn't figure out if you were like negotiating the deal or something like that.
No.
And then it was like, oh, you were interviewing.
Yeah. Before, I thought I had hit the merge button earlier, and like, cause I would look at you and you were like kind of nodding on the screen. So I'm like, oh, yeah, he knows what's going on. And before that, me and him were having like a conversation about Vice. I might have a record. I might throw it into the recording, but about the Vice Network, the TV station, and how much he loves it. And we just went into down the wormhole, and I thought that you were just waiting to chime in. and then I realized, I'm like, and here's my co-host, Mike. And Sid's like, Mike, where are you at, Mike? Oh, he's afraid of me. But what an interview, man. What a great interview. And finally... for those of you, we joked about it before, but finally, I've been kind of hunting him down for like, bro, it's got to be what, 6 months?
That was, pretty close up to there. I think, yeah it was in sometime in 2018 you were saying, oh, I might have this.
And right.
It was on, it was off, it was on, it was off. And then, like, the last few weeks, it was
getting closer.
Much a weekly
heating up.
Where, yeah.
But I really enjoyed the interview, man. Just very honest, a lot of fun stories, and very, very happy to interview Sid Vicious, or Sid Udy, whatever you want to call him. Sid everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
Sid, eater of worlds.
Yeah, so that story I was telling him is 100% true. Me and my friend Alex, we were like kind of like, we weren't like nerds per se, but we like were nerds together. Like maybe at school we were like okay, but like when we hung out together, we were kind of like nerds, and we were playing with wrestling figures in like 7th, 8th grade, which is way too long to be playing with action figures. And we would have like little pay per views and stuff like that, and like set up things, and we were like in the height of that attitude era or whatever you want to call it, and like where everybody was in, you know. And we got the Psycho Sid figure. I remember, like, surprising him, and we'd make him, like, win matches and stuff like that. And, like, right now the hair on my arms are standing up because it's so douchey.
Yeah, I was right. Was it Sid the one? Because I remember you told me, like,
no, it was Sid.
You found a figure, and you just waited on it. And,
it
like,
was Sid.
You were doing the pay-per-view, and you just, like, oh, whatever, it's going to be here.
Bam! Yep, it was Psycho Sid. It was... Because, like, at that time, he was, like, he, like, got into ECW, and that was when ECW was, like, kind of cool, and, like, he was wreaking havoc on it, and, yeah, it was, Sid was the figure.
Yeah, if he was in it for the money, I'd see why he left ECW so fast.
Yeah. But, pretty amazing to talk to him, so that was a fun interview, man.
Very incredible, man.
All right, Mike Berlew, the one and only Psycho Sid.
Yeah, hell of a guy, hell of a conversation there. I mean, I was just sitting back. I mean, like we said, we've been trying to get him for so long and figure, all right, at like the 10-minute mark, he'd be like, all right, guys, I got to go. But
right.
He just kept on answering our questions and playing along with us. It was really cool.
Yeah, and I want to throw a shout-out. The fan question there was actually our good friend Kevin Grifo, who is a host of the Shining Wizards podcast, who has interviewed basically every wrestler you could ever think of. I mean, they do a great job with their wrestling podcast, and they have interviewed basically...
AJ Styles.
Chris Jericho, I think they've
Chris
done.
Jericho.
Amazing.
I mean, list is on and on. Like, they've been doing it longer than us. I think they've been doing it for about 6 or 7 years. Now. They're like on episode 420 something, I think. Want to say?
Yeah. So that was the fan question for Psycho City. Yeah. So,
Speaking of wrestling, Scott.
Yep.
Interesting thing happened last night. So a friend in Jersey, he gave me his. ID to WWE Network. So me and Izzy watched the Royal Rumble last
night. It's so funny you say that. I almost had a Royal Rumble bit planned for tonight. I couldn't finish it, but so it might come back later on. But
when they do the greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, we'll bring it back. And you know when it is, so just mark down the time. So
yeah.
But
yeah.
In any case, so we're. Me and Izzy are in the band. We're watching the event, and we're just chatting along. And me, I always joke around with her and stuff like that. And every once in a while, she's like, hey, and she'll just give, like, a tap on the shoulder or something like that. So we're laying there, and I don't even remember what the joke was. It was something cute. It wasn't, like, nailing her with anything or anything crazy like that. And she's like, hey, and she went to smack my tummy, and she smacked me directly in the area, if you will.
Your knee.
The Fiends and Franks.
Your knee.
Area.
Oh.
No, higher than my knee.
Your thigh.
A little bit higher,
The area where your penis should be.
There you go. Good answer.
Okay, so she slaps you right in the nuts.
She slapped me right in the nuts, and
so your wife slaps you right in the beans.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a decent shot. It wasn't a full on punch, but it was enough for the testes to say, "Oop, I felt something there."
Well, that's the worst, right? Like that. That's what it is. It doesn't take much. It only takes a little, like a touch forward or a touch backward to really get them sick.
Yeah, it seems like something the Mythbusters should have tackled at all. Like, how much pressure into a slap into the testicles will make it hurt?
Yeah, I'm not sure that would be on Discovery Channel, but yes, they should still do that.
They should add a web series, Scott. Just go along with me, okay?
Sponsored by Pornhub.
So I had to walk around to get that feeling out of my system. I think that thing lingered for like 8 to 10 minutes and all. Yeah, it was good enough. I wasn't dead, but it was
the fiance has done that to me. She's definitely done that to me before. So
yeah, so she's apologizing to me like crazy. Oh, I don't know what I thought your stomach was there. That was her response to everything. I thought your stomach was there. You're under the covers. I'm like, that's not really an excuse. I shouldn't be saying every time I go under the covers, hey, honey, are you going to slap me tonight? Because if so, avoid midway down, okay? So she keeps on, she feels bad. I'm like, no, it's fine, it's fine. And what was really interesting about it was the next day I'm on my phone and, you know, Facebook says, pops up, you have memories from blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
So I take a look at it, and exactly 1 year from today, I put up a Facebook status how she punched me in the kneecap.
Apparently,
over the Grammys.
Apparently, you got to be a lot nicer around the 27th, 28th of the month.
Yeah, it's just the weirdest coincidence, because after I read it, I figured out what happened. We were watching the Emmys, and it was Best Pop Album or Song, one of them.
Okay.
And I know Pink was nominated. I know Lady Gaga was nominated, but Ed Sheeran won. And she got so pissed off that Ed Sheeran won that she... what the hell? And she slapped me right on the side of the kneecap.
See, there's a couple...
like the funny bone.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there. Like, Ed Sheeran's a pretty talented dude, man. He like, you know, even if you're not into him, he's a very talented dude. And two, I love that you were the punching bag for that. Like, you know, Ed Sheeran, God damn it, Burlew, and then punch you.
Yeah, it was one of those weird... She's like, what? And kind of like the side hand, when you get mad, you just go across. And I was sitting next to her, and she hit it perfectly on the side, kind of where the kneecap ends, where...
And your, balls...
funny bone.
And your balls begin?
No, my balls weren't involved this year. Times have changed, Scott. Get along with the story.
You were supposed to say, yeah, where my kneecap ended and my balls began.
That would mean I have really saggy balls.
Or just a big, giant... Well, okay, continue.
Yeah. So it's just one of those weird things. I'm like, how is it within a 1 year, almost a 1 year anniversary, she keeps on... Something happens that makes her get violent with me.
Probably because every year she's like, oh my God, what the hell am I doing with myself?
Well, I don't see how. I mean, she's married to me, so there's positive
No, that's exactly what I mean. Like, she sees you sleeping. She's like, God, should I kill him or just deal with this for another year? And every year, those feelings just build up, and they just build up, and they just build up. And then, you know, like...
So what's next year's entry? Like, boiling water to the face?
I feel like next year's injury will be something to the leg or foot, so you can't, like, escape as quick or chase her down as quick. Like, she's slowly trying to kill you.
Yeah, she's to slow me down so she can have access to multiple shots instead of going one per year. I get what you're saying.
Exactly, exactly. So,
like, maybe like a high heel to my big toe.
Right. So she starts to take out the feet and the other appendages. You become slower and less intimidating, so she can finally break free and be like, oops, hashtag messed up.
So Izzy is basically the next character in Mortal Kombat 11, is what you're telling me.
Correct, correct. But
the slow killer.
You know, or like she's going to be like, you know, like what is it, Leah Remini? Is that her name?
Yeah.
From Scientology, where she escapes and finally tells her story of how she got out of this. She's going to be telling us how she got out of you.
So she'll be on like A&E talking about, he kept on using the dog voice. There wasn't even a dog in the room, and I heard Obi.
Exactly, exactly. He claimed his podcast is so successful, you know, like stuff like that.
He brought me down to Georgia for no good reason.
Right, right. So, I mean, I side with her.
Fascinating, fascinating. Is there any way to break the cycle?
I would just think you just gotta quit the podcast.
Just die? Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Quit in life. But, Berlo, don't get hit in the balls this week.
You keep on telling me to do stuff, you know. I don't like authority at all.
But I think with the interview, it's time to get the hell out of here. What do you got to promote?
Well, you brought up The Shining Wizard, so I guess I'll talk about Grifo's other podcast, The Dumb Fellows, with him, Joe Carney, Rich McDonald, KP Burke, Natty Bumper Car. Them boys get together, chat about their life on the road, some funny stories, anything that interested them. They're a good bunch of guys, really funny, great comedians, and they put on a pretty decent podcast. So check them out on GardenStateComedy.com or look up The Dumb Fellas on wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yes, yes, yes. One of our good friends in the old podcast game, I guess, if you will. I gotta promote a gig coming up in April, which I know I mentioned on the last podcast, but I got asked to book the Cat Convention in Asbury Park. Yes, the Cat Convention, Catsbury Park. We get to interview the guy who runs it, DJ Bornshine, and it was actually turned out to be a great interview. And I'm very happy to be doing the show, and I got to book it. So me, Mr. Natty Bumpercar, Mike Ciccoli, Kevin Hall, Mike D'Alto, and Angela Sharp are going to be going down doing cat-themed comedy at 3 o'clock p.m. at the Wonder Bar. And I know that sounds insane, and that's literally why I'm doing it. So it's going to be a fun time, so come on out and support the Cat Convention.
When you think of spring break, you think of mid-afternoon comedy.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, at a Cat Convention.
Absolutely. I mean, how can you not? I mean, we all watched MTV Summer Break. We saw Bill Bellamy in those Cat Conventions. We know what goes on.
That's correct. But guys, there's a lot of places you can listen to us. iTunes, the Discovery, County Podcast Network, Laughable, you name it. We're on a lot of things, so please check us out. Leave a review and message us, and we'll try to get an interview going or do something you want. And tell Berlu you will punch him in the nuts on air.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should give away free T-shirts and free nut shots. I mean, I think that should be our game.
Free T-shirts, free nut shots. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind in your back. Bye-bye, guys. See you next week.
Keep the cup on your nuts. Bye-bye, everyone.